Building News, the podcast. Let's do it.
Welcome to Boat Building News, the podcast, a series of engaging interviews with key individuals from within the marine industry. I'm excited. This is going to be epic.
In this episode, we welcome Jake Cronk from Twisted Marine, a company bursting onto the British boat building scene with incredible attention to detail, ultimately achieving the best made better. So thanks, Jake, coming on the podcast, especially in such a busy time leading up to the boat show. So really appreciate you finding time for us. To note that when you agreed to come on this podcast, we haven't actually released an episode yet. So you're trusting me quite blindly, which I do really appreciate. But welcome.
No, thank you, Holly. And thank you very much for having me on the debut episode, I guess. Very excited.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to being a part of it.
Awesome. So, Jake, tell us in a nutshell who you are and tell us a little bit about Twisted Marine.
Yeah, no problem at all. So I'm Jake Cronk. I'm the Managing Director of Twisted Marine. The company started about 2 years ago, and it's, an offspring of Twisted Automotive Group, which is a 20-year-old a company with 20 years of heritage, where we make basically the best Land Rover Defenders that money can buy. Our ethos is the best made better, and we've taken that to the marine industry to pioneer resto modding.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about the story. I know the story behind Twisted Automotive is really cool, so it'd be great to start with that and how that links into Twisted Marine and how Twisted Marine was born.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, Twisted Automotive has been run by the managing director, Charles Fawcett, since its inception. Awesome company, pioneering engineering at the heart of what it does. And, you know, they really do push the boundaries with the Land Rover Defender. And they make an awesome product at the end of it, which, you know, appeals to a really discerning audience. It's really good to be part of the journey. And basically, about 2 years ago, myself and Charles procured a company called Sulcombe Marine Services, down in Sulcombe, Lincoln Boatyard. And we use that as basically the arms and legs to start Twisted Marine. So we procured the engineering excellence within that business. I joined myself as a marine engineer from many years before that. I've moved on previously, after that, to sort of go into Mercedes Formula One and some other design roles. Pushing the engineering forwards into the sort of the marine industry, we took over Sulcombe Marine Services, and Twisted Marine started with the intentions of sort of taking resto modding to a new level in the marine industry. So we started off by buying a Scarab Wellcraft 38, which we were going to put some brand new engine V8s into it, roll the Pentas, and basically make an awesome product that we can turn the keys on and, turn something out there that's different and new to the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So how's that project going at the moment?
So the Scarab project, we started that one briefly this year. New engines have arrived for that. However, we've put that on the back burner to make way for the new debut of our Axopar 25, which is the T300S that we're launching at Southampton Boat Show. And we've been pushing our recent rib range.
Yes, tell us more about the debut at Southampton.
So Southampton, we are taking two boats, the Twisted T450R, which is our 450 horsepower, 28.5-foot rib. And we are also taking our brand new, yet to be exposed to the world, Bahama Gold T300S, which is our new sports boat variant. It's based on the 25-foot Axopar. We've taken this boat from Axopar, and it's basically going through our workshops now. Hopefully we'll be finished next Tuesday in time for the debut.
Fingers crossed.
No, I'm sure it'll go to plan. But yeah, so we're taking the Axopar, and basically we're putting about 400 to 500 hours of rigging into it to try and create a truly exceptional craft.
Okay, awesome. So what do you hope to get at the end of it? Some sort of, you know, incredible boat, top of the range, something never seen before. You know, tell us about the finished product.
Yes, the boats that we're trying to create, and I guess it's the same across the board for all of them, really, and even the Scarab when that's finished. We're trying to create something that is exceptional in terms of engineering, pushing things to the limit. Mm-hmm. So compared to, say, the base variants, we're trying to go for, with engineering at the heart of what we do, better economy, better performance, better acceleration, and also just ironing out any other little niggles that we don't really like. So if I sort of put that back to the defenders a little bit. We know the Defender very well. We've worked with it for a very long time. It's essentially a flawed product in many ways. Anyone that's ever had a Defender knows that they're a bit noisy. They rattle, they leak.
Yeah.
You know, what we do is we take out the bad bits. We don't take away everything, because in the Defender, you know, some of the bits in it, we call it sort of Defenderisms. There's good little quirks to it. So we keep in the thing.
Yeah, they're known and loved, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. So we don't want to take away all of the character and just, you know, create a machine out of it. We just hone in on the good bits, take away the bad bits, and refine the overall product. And that's exactly
so you're keeping it as it is, but just enhancing it to the absolute maximum you can.
Exactly that, yeah. So we focus on, like I said, performance. So if we take the T450R, for example, that rib is about 10 mile an hour faster than the base boat that it's based on. Mid-range to top end is more improved, and overall efficiency is about 20% better as well because of some of the engineering changes that we've done.
So this is above and beyond just taking something and making it look cool, isn't it? You know, this is, you know, people walking past your stand or people seeing your boats out on the water, you know, they look great, they look fun, but this is beneath the surface. You're actually improving from an, you know, like you say, engineering at the heart of this.
Exactly that, yeah. So we push to improve the product. There's obviously metrics that we can work towards to try and improve by certain percentages. But like you said, before moving on to the engineering of it, we also do focus on the, you know, the aesthetics and also the general touch points. For us, that's a very important part of it. You know, I think that's how you really quantify the quality of something, is, you know, how it feels, how you interact with it, you know, the overall experience, should we say, that you, and how you feel when you're on the boat. We, you know, all we want to do is make it so that the person that's bought the boat, you know, A, they think it's bloody cool. And B, when they're on it, they just, you know, I think, you know, this is an unreal item. You know, that's what we try to push for.
Well, and unique as well. You know, I mean, it's not something, they're not a boat that you'll see every day.
No, exactly that. So, we're I guess, like a performance variant of, by all means, you could say that. But we're also low volume. Attention to detail is paramount. You know, we're looking at an allocation of maybe 5 of the 25s next year. So the T300S first edition of the boat show will be, you know, very, very low volumes, not even double digits. So you can buy this boat with the confidence that your neighbour next door in the marina is not going to have the same boat. You're not going to just spend, you know, a fortune on it, walk down the road and see someone with exactly the same thing. And I think that gives that the air of exclusivity about it as well.
Yeah, and that's important. You know, if somebody's out there and they're looking to buy something to enhance their life, you know, a luxury purchase, more often than not, their buying behaviours, they don't want it to look common. You know, I don't want to use the word common, you know, because no boat is, you know, is common, but they don't want to know that they're just one of many that have been knocked out of a production line.
No, exactly.
So, you know, that's what they get with you, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And to be fair, the Axopar for us, this has been a real exciting venture. We can't wait to really establish the connection between the two brands. I believe I'm right in saying this is the first ever Axopar to ever be rigged outside of their factory. So we've been given the privilege.
It's amazing.
To take it. Yeah, it really is. You know, we've been given the privilege to take this to Sulcombe, put it through our artisan workshop. You know, I'm sure we spend 5-10 times longer than they do on things, because we don't streamline, you know, manufacturing processes and times like a chain would. We do it. You know, one or two guys focus on that project and they see it through, deliver the final product. And it's something that everyone at the workshop is, you know, we're proud for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what challenges are you facing right now? You know, I mean, either specifically to Twisted Marine or, you know, something that's perhaps industry wide. You know, what's keeping you awake at night?
At the moment, time scales for the boat show.
Aren't we all? That's a common theme, trust me.
But beyond that, I mean, the biggest issue, which is obviously global in the marine industry, is engine supply and availability. That at the moment is the biggest bottleneck on the supply of any boat. It's the first question you have to ask when an order is being placed. You know, when are we going to get the next engine that would go on the back of the boat? So that for us is definitely the biggest bottleneck that we're seeing. And I think that we're still playing catch up a little bit from the COVID era, the general boom in the market that then followed that. And you know, that's the biggest issue we're finding, really, is procurement parts.
And what do you think caused that boom in the boating industry sort of post-COVID?
I personally think it's because in where I'm based now as the HQ in Salcombe is obviously we most of our audience is holidaymakers, people that have second homes out there. Yeah. So I think it's the culture of, you know, live now, spend the money and have fun. I think the pandemic put a bit of a swing on people's perception. You know, the saving
for tomorrow. Agree.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. Mm. You know, it's always been the saving for tomorrow, you know, spend it later. But I think some people now think, well, you know, you're only alive once. I think it's put that perception, yeah, and people just go out there and are buying boats and things that, you know, I think the whole leisure industry boomed after the pandemic, and I think that's why.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, people, you mentioned the holiday homes, you know, people that, you know, I mean, that are living in the big cities, perhaps they didn't have the opportunity to work from home. There wasn't that culture, was there? So maybe they are spending a little bit more time out in the countryside or, you know, out in their second homes in Salcombe or by the seaside, and they're getting more use out of their boat. So what was once just perhaps a seasonal, you know, use of their boat is now maybe every other weekend, you know, so they've got more access to it, haven't they?
Exactly. I mean, let's be honest, in leisure purposes, a boat is always like the bottom of the list in terms of what you buy. You know, it's not a necessity as such, but you're definitely right.
Which is outrageous. I think it should be a necessity.
No, indeed. But yeah, you're definitely right. In terms of the work from home culture, so many more people are definitely on the water more. We've seen it this year. Obviously, we've had a crack in the summer. But the estuaries have been absolutely booming, really. It's been great to see.
It's brilliant to see when you see that, though, isn't it? You know, we just everyone enjoying the beautiful UK summer. And I think that people have got used to, you know, especially with the flight disruptions due to COVID and, you know, post COVID, the flight disruptions as well. People are warming to the idea of holidaying in the UK. And I'm actually quite surprised about how much they're enjoying it and are thinking twice about jetting off all around the world to get the weather and to get the beaches. So, you know, they're considering a boat purchase to enjoy the UK possibly.
Yeah, you're right. And obviously, there is still an element of uncertainty with COVID. Some countries are still in lockdown in the world. And obviously, some people have still got their personal fears to it, you know, both with travel and, you know, going abroad. So I think the staycation society is going to stay around for a little bit longer. And if anything, the weather we've had here this year has hopefully just, you know, boosted the chances of that kicking around for a bit longer.
Yeah, do you know what? I'd never actually thought of UK weather, actually, the impact that has on and the staycation industry and the impact that has on the marine industry and the actual building of boats, actually. But you're absolutely right. It just changes the mindset of people in the UK and where they want to spend their time and ultimately what they want to spend their money on.
Yeah, no,
I've never really sort of made that link before. So it's interesting.
Well, I think it's like anything. Okay. A couple of years ago, we had, you know, a stream of easterly winds all the time and boating on the sort of southwest coast wasn't great. And then that influences everything because also with Twisted Marine, we've got Salcombe Marine Services, which is our in-house engineering department, basically. And that obviously also caters for the engineering in Salcombe, on the harbour, on the estuary. So if people aren't using their boats very much, generally speaking, you know, they don't put the hours on them. They don't have the same service requirements. You know, they don't break them, so they don't need fixing. And the overall industry just, I guess, suffers as a result of it. So, yeah, good weather is paramount for our industry.
Yeah. You're not wrong. Okay. Well, Jack, tell us about your proudest moment. You know, this doesn't have to be specific to Twisted Marine. Just, you know, throughout your career, what's something you've done that you've thought, you know what, I'm really proud of that?
I guess many things. A couple of highlights. I mean, for me personally, like I said, I've had a career in Formula One and Formula E more latterly. Both with Mercedes.
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely done the most interesting parts of engineering, haven't you? When you think you've come from Formula One and you're now making, you know, one of the arguably one of the coolest ribs on the market.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I guess for me, in a rounded way, so just a bit of backstory, I actually started in Salcombe as an apprentice marine engineer about 12, 13 years ago, then left, did my university career, went to Mercedes, and now I'm managing director for the company I started at. So I think for me, the proudest element of that is the fact that I've gone full circle, apprentice to managing director, you know, back to where I sort of started, where my roots were, and then now we're just taking the marine industry to a whole new level.
Yeah, I guess personally for you then, that must just feel like you've come home, but you've come home, you left as a boy and came back as a man almost.
Yeah, it is a very, the very cliche saying, but yeah, no, certainly.
Yeah, it's cliche.
great to be back though. I mean, Sulcombe's an awesome little microclimate. There's great people here. I'm just loving the fact that I'm helming the sort of Twisted Marine side of things, Sulcombe Marine Services. And we're just pushing the brand now and trying to take sort of engineering excellence across the South Coast. We've also procured, which you may have seen in the media, Brighton Marine Services as well.
Oh, yeah.
So we've now
got
a site over on the sort of Southeast Coast. So plenty to keep me busy. And the idea really being that we can join the dots up, create multiple service centres along the South Coast. So if someone does decide to buy a Twisted Rib or the T300S Twisted Sports Boat, they can take it to any of our service centres, and hopefully with the relevant dealerships along the way, we can supply them with the best engineering for the best boat that they've got.
It's very, very UK focused. So is that a conscious decision?
I think at the moment it's UK. We are obviously looking at dealerships and things and furthering our network abroad. There's no limits to where we want to go with it. I mean, Axopar itself is already a globally renowned product, one of the best-selling boats, I think, in Europe.
Yeah.
So we certainly want to push that further afield. I think it's always good to start, on the home turf, just like Charles did with Automotive. So again, the HQ for Automotive Twisted is at Thirsk in Yorkshire. And again, they've branched out now as well. We've got sites in Kensington. There's been other licensing deals that were brought out in the States and further afield as well. So, we're definitely not just honing in on the UK, but we want to perfect the product first, create a support network for our UK clients, and then we'll branch further afield from there.
Sure. So what's your ultimate vision? If you've got this one goal that you look at every day, and that's what you're striving to do, what does that look like?
Yeah. So, for me personally, I think my goal would be to get Twisted Marine to a point where we are renowned as a big player in the marine industry, but with quality engineering and overall excellence, and that the cornerstones of what we do. I don't want to be the MD of a business where we churn out 150 boats a year, 200 boats a year. That would be great in terms of finances revenue. But what I would like to do, just like we do with Automotive, is we keep to the core principles with engineering, attention to detail, luxury and finesse, the heart of what we do. We're not about big volumes. We're more about the intimacy of the product that we have, the relationship with our clients, creating that story, and also giving a bit of a journey for our clients to come on as well. So in the automotive side of things, we've got once a year something called the Yorkshire 300. And it's a 300-mile round trip across the beautiful Yorkshire countryside. And it gives our clients an opportunity to keep in touch, be a part of we call it the Twisted Alumni. So basically you buy a Twisted.
Cool.
You're in the family and, the door's always open. And that's what we create. We create the journey with the customer.
It's like an exclusive club.
Yeah, exactly that. It's not trying to be closed door. It's more the fact that, we're aware that what we're making is exceptional. We want people to be on the journey with us. And, Twisted ownership's the way forward.
Not that you're biased or anything.
Not at all.
Not at all, no. So, when you look, do you ever get fazed by the competition? I mean, the market that you're in, it's fiercely competitive. Do you look at other people? Do you look at other brands and do you follow closely what they do? Or do you just stay in your own lane and just focus purely on what you know the Twisted vision is?
Personally, competition, it's an interesting one, very interesting subject. I mean, when I was at Mercedes, for example, I was always told, if you're trying to copy, and this is my time for a seven-time world championship Formula One winning team, if you try to copy your competitors, you're only ever going to be as good as them. You're never going to be better. So we really do try to keep our head straight as to where we're going with it. We look at the product in hand. We learn the products. We learn about their foibles, the good, the bad, the ugly, and then we create the craft at the end of it. As to who our competition are, again, that's a bit of a point that could definitely be argued, because it's a bit of an unknown one, really. Where we price our items, obviously they're on the higher end of the price bracket compared to the base products that they're sort of built upon, and the foundations where they started. But we put so much into them that the overall product at the end of it is completely different. You know, it's almost unrecognisable. You could argue that our competitors, because we're trying to sell to the sort of client where this is a desirable object that they want, not that they need, and it fills a practical purpose. But for example, the Defenders, they might be someone's third, fourth, fifth car. For us, it's a luxury item that they want. They want to be able to have the status to say they've got it. They want to be the coolest guy in the marina with the coolest boat. You know, what they're looking at buying isn't necessarily just a boat. It could be a Rolex watch. It could be a helicopter, any number of items. So I think our competitors, it's not as straightforward as saying, you know, the obvious, oh, is it, you know, ribeye for us because they're geographically around the corner and they also make ribs.
It's the obvious thing that springs to mind, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You'd always say that, but I think it's bigger than that. You know, we're competing with people that just want something that's, you know, outrageously cool, something that's a bit of fun and gives them the feel-good factor.
So you're saying your customers, you know, when they're making the choice to purchase a Twisted, it's not, are we purchasing a Twisted rib over a ribeye rib because we want a rib? It's what are we buying as a luxury item? And that could be to something as a Twisted rib versus a Rolex versus, you know, a supercar. Is you know, the competition's not necessarily boat versus boat.
No, I don't think it is. I really don't think it is. We make boats that are low volume, awesome, well engineered and fit for a purpose, but they, like I say, the story that they have and the passion and the soul behind them is so much more than that. But you know, we hand build these in Salcombe by our sort of professionally trained engineers, and the products at the end
and that means a lot to people, though, doesn't it? You know, if something is British made, British built, you know, the kudos that comes with, especially in the marine industry, is massive, isn't it?
No, it really is. I mean, especially, you know, we're doing this in Salcombe. You know, generally, there's not a huge, should we say, commercial society of Salcombe. It's awfully based on holiday lets and, you know, tourism. So this, you know, from our perspective, supplies jobs back into the community. It's all British made. Our entire supply chain of everything that goes on the boat as well is also British, apart from obviously the base manufacturers, Fraxapar, which is Scandinavian. But you know, even our ribs, for example, you know, they're based on a British boat builder based in Christchurch. Everything from resin pot to completed boat, from our point of view, is all British made. That's great.
Which I guess does simplify the supply chain a little bit for you, does it? Or
I think it probably does simplify the supply chain a little bit. You know, most of the stuff that I try to do from the Twisted side of things is relatively local to us. Not only does it simplify the supply chain, but I think it eliminates some areas of uncertainty. Obviously, we've had the global pandemic, different countries being on lockdown at different times, being able to isolate that to, you know, mainly UK distribution manufacturing, it eliminates the import requirements.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a little bit out of the box because, you know, you talk about, you know, a lot of the engines that are going onto these ribs and everything. But have you ever looked at, you know, from a sustainability point of view, whether you would look to develop something electric?
Certainly, yeah. And like I said, or alluded to earlier on, after my a few years in Formula One, I actually moved over and I was I can't remember what number engineer I was, but I was one of the very first few engineers on the Formula E team for Mercedes, which was really quite exciting. Okay. So you know, when I started as a member of that team, it was real back to the basics. Here's a selection of boxes. This needs to be an inverter in 2 years' time. We need to go racing. And it was real, you know, real cool to be able to jump on something completely fresh. Idea to be able to create something cool at the end of it. You know, when I was in Formula One, awesome as that was, you know, there's almost no budget. And we were already a three-time or at least double world championship winning team. So it was iterative, small improvements, whereas Formula E for me was, you know, completely new concept.
It's groundbreaking, isn't it, rather than marginal improvements.
I played quite a big part in the design of our inverter, which then went on to win two world championships in Formula E. So that was quite exciting, and again quite proud
sounds it.
But yeah, yeah, so I've definitely got experience in electric propulsion, It's an avenue I'm keen to push. At the moment, the UK infrastructure isn't really there for it, but the, you know, I think it's always chicken and egg. The more electric boats there are on the estuary, the more, you know, demand there is for infrastructure. That will be
exactly it's supply, classic supply and demand, isn't it? Yeah. So when you were working in Formula One, did you always know that your heart was in marine? Did you always have it in the back of your mind that that's where you'd return, or were you fully embraced and that's the career you thought you were, you know, the career path you thought you were going to take?
I think I've always had a soft spot for marine. Like I say, when I was 16 years old, I started on, you know, it, even before that I was knocking around on boats, but when I was 16 years old, I started my apprenticeship in marine engineering. You know, my basis and foundations was always marine. I went into Formula One because for me that was, you know, the pioneering of engineering excellence, and it's an itch I had to scratch. And I worked bloody hard to get there. you know, as far as I was concerned, after a few years of doing it, the pandemic hit, the role changed slightly. Still enjoyable, but I think, you know, me and my family had to relocate to the Midlands. For me personally, the pandemic put another spin on it. And again, you know, I didn't need much of an excuse, but it was an excuse to return back to Devon and crack on with the marine industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, welcome to the Midlands. I mean, there's not really, you know, you couldn't really get two different places, could you? Okay, awesome. So a little bit of a fun part of the podcast now, something you've probably not had any chance to prepare for, but a quick round of Would You Rather.
Go for it.
Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I'll start quite safe. Would you rather a twisted Land Rover or a twisted rib?
Oh.
It's tough, isn't it?
Ideally, you need both, really. You need the full rig, but since I'm based in Salcombe, I'd have to say twisted rib.
Yeah, I think your hands are tied with that one. I think you have to, wouldn't you? Okay, so if the two didn't go hand in hand, would you rather an incredible amount of money and earning opportunity or a huge sense of achievement?
Ooh, very good question.
this is why I love this round.
Yes, I will go with a huge amount of money and opportunity, purely because I would like to think I'm lucky enough to think I've already got a huge sense of achievement already.
Okay, that's interesting. So I thought you might have gone the other way there.
Well, only because I feel incredibly privileged with my career so far. So I guess that's where I am. Yeah, my avenue is that I think I've ticked a lot of boxes and had some awesome experiences so far already.
Awesome. Okay, and one last one. And you might have known this one was coming. But being Salcombe based, would you prefer a life supply of Cranch's Sweet Shop or a life supply of Salcombe gin?
Oh, I think...
That's a really tough one.
It is, yeah. And I do have a sweet tooth, but I think I would have to go with Salcombe gin on that one.
I think I would absolutely agree with you. I would too. Okay, awesome. And just one final question, the question that we ask every single guest. What's the one quote that inspires you and that you strive to live by?
Oh, that, and again, that's a tough one, purely because there's quite a few. And actually, the interesting thing is every single week on a Sunday, I send out a weekly schedule, and that's got a quote on the end of it every single week.
Oh, really?
There's quite a few on that one. I think I've even got one frame at home. I did have it at the top of my stairs. However, we now bought a bungalow in Maldon in Devon, so don't have any stairs for that one. But the quote is from Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it says, you can't climb the ladder of success with your hands in your pockets.
I'm a sucker for a motivational quote. I absolutely love them. I've never heard that. Repeat it to me again.
Well, it says, you can't climb the ladder of success with your hands in your pockets.
I absolutely love it. That's a brilliant way to finish the first podcast. So thanks so much, Jake, for joining us. I hope the Southampton Boat Show is as successful as you want it to be and more. And yeah, I hope if anyone wants to see the Twisted Rib or the Twisted Boats, then pop along. Which stand are you on, Jake?
That caught me out now. I think it's EO39. So we are two along from the restaurant on the waterside.
Cool. Pop along, see the Twisted stand. You won't be disappointed. See you
soon,
Jake.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thanks, Holly.
I really hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you have, then it would be awesome if you could leave a rating or a review. Don't forget to subscribe so you can listen to us again. See you soon.